Okay, so first, before going in business, let me do one thing which can be interpreted in three different ways, depending of how it's your attitude and kindness. So one is that I'm being very kind and putting some of my books there for all of you, so just, so that's the first interpretation. Second interpretation, somebody asked about promotion, what we can do for promotion, so this is one other thing. Third interpretation, this is an example of how white male is good and comfortable in doing promotion, which we're talking about. Not Anglo-Saxon, but nobody's perfect. So I want to talk about hype, and I very much thanks, Katie, because I actually asked for having the possibility, because I really would like to get your feedback on that, because that's a concern I have. A concern I have a lot as a scientist and also as somebody who does science sort of popularization and write books. And the concern is it's simply whether we're hyping science too much and whether we're doing damage of that, and it comes in three different versions. So I will tell you what are the three problems I see. And I get a reaction for you. I also talked about writing more open, somehow a big article about that. But before I want to, so first, just to make it clear, I say things something totally obvious here, but just to frame it. Science is fantastic for society. Without science, we wouldn't have modern society. Obviously, science is fascinating, incredibly fascinating. In its results, we discover about whatever you like, galaxies or atoms, whatever you like, or the history of the past. Third, the saga of science itself, it's fascinating. So telling that the science of discovery is fascinating. And of course, fourth, the saga is still going on and is fascinating to tell about it. And to tell about it has a lot of good for society, because it shows the utility of science, and also, of course, brings people, young people, passionate to do that. All this is fine, but first, I see a overselling of science results, which has been steadily growing. And I don't know if my impression, because I'm putting too much attention to it, but in the last year, just zooming up, I could make a list. I made a list, but I have 30 or 40 examples, which I've, of course, not going to go into that, but I just mention a few. I think you all remember the space-time tunnel created in a quantum computer. Okay, this was on the front page of all the newspapers of the world. It was the big news, and almost no science publicly challenged the fact that it was total bullshit. Right? It is total bullshit. Right? Absolutely, not because the research itself is not interesting. Of course, I mean, maybe a quantum computer is interesting, but because, of course, there was no quantum tunneling built up there. Somebody put it, it would be the equivalent of a kid make a sketch of the moon on his notebook and say, "Oh, a young student has created a moon in his It's made a little sketch." That's one example. A little bit later, there was this big thing also in the news all over the world about a big step ahead toward the solution of the energy problem of humankind with fusion. I don't know if you remember. I know a little bit of it. I looked into this. It's, again, bullshit. This was a military research about a technology, which is interesting by itself. It's nothing to do, no foreseeable way of using that toward a sort of civil use of energy production, and the overall energy that you needed to do the thing was much higher than the energy coming out from the actual fusion. And so on and so forth. There was I read things about the definite proof that there are other universes. I read a thing in the news about, in fact, this was even in scientific journals, about a definite measurement that shows that the mind is quantum mechanical, because somebody make a measurement in the Hertz and somebody in the Hertz, and they found correlations, and they confuse correlation with entanglement. So this is proofs that the mind is quantum mechanical. And it wasn't you. It was on BBC, okay, which you would see is reliable. Now, one could continue. I think yesterday I mentioned that. Somebody mentioned Michio Kaku. I think it's not because it's not good to talk about speculations. I mean, it's wonderful to talk about speculations. I think it's fine to talk about speculations, but selling speculations for those. Now, why I think this is dangerous? Because we are losing, by doing that, we lose the credibility of science. It's not that society is stupid and in the long run doesn't realize that this is bullshit. And I think by going on, so I ask myself, have I been doing something like that? Do we do something like that? Is there this risk? Or even more, do we who talk to the public have a responsibility of saying, of challenging some of these things? Should we do that? Sometimes we don't because it's obvious how these things happen, right? Because scientists are passionate about what they all think, because being going on the press means more money, more recognition, even more grants. There's a logic of how it happened. On the other side, the press just want something spectacular, so you give them something and they transform in something like that. So everybody makes it a little bit. But I think the result is dangerous, and I expect a moment in which quite strongly society would say this is bullshit. I mean, do we believe the scientists? They're overselling something. And there is a whole culture of overselling something, okay? We are the greatest of the world. We are doing the future. We are building this. We are discovering the major, blah, 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 blah. If one makes it gross too much, I see the danger of that. And the danger is that society will lose trust, and correctly, not in science. First point. Second, I said I was going to be brief. Second point, connected to the first. Part of this, not all of this, but part of this seems to me even a larger problem, which doesn't just refer to how things goes to the media and to the large public, but also within science itself and even how we teach science. Maybe this is specific about physics and frontier physics, the kind of things I do, the kind of things PI does, but I feel that there is a sliding confusion between, let me put it this way. Science works because we speculate, obviously, otherwise we wouldn't. And science works because we are critical with respect to speculations. Otherwise, it wouldn't be science. And there's a good balance to keep about these things. And all through science, there's a boundary between what the things we have understood in a reliable way, that's sort of established science, and what we're trying to do. And this boundary has been fogged a little bit too much, in my opinion, even to the young students. I have young students here in PI coming to me and say, but what is it that it actually we know about the universe? Do we know about supersymmetry? Do we know about neutrino mass? Do we know about other dimensions? Not clear ideas. But science today has a perfectly clear idea about what we know and what we don't know. We know the generativity, we know the standard model, we don't know whether loop quantum gravity, should I do whatever, is right or wrong. We don't know if string theory is right or wrong. We don't know whether ADS, CFT is right or wrong. We don't know about supersymmetry. We don't know about the universe. We don't know about 9/10 of the things that part of the community go out to say how beautiful it is. So unless we're very clear about that, I think we're making damage to society, to the students, and to science itself. And this maybe is even a deeper point of philosophy of science, because we have been schooled in this sort of simplified version of Popper and Kuhn, which says that everything which is not falsifiable, it's equally correct, okay? Which is completely bullshit, again, from the point of view of philosophy of science. It's not true that anything which is not falsifiable is equally correct, right? Because the theory that there are little red dragons in the other face of the moon that are very, very good at hiding has not been falsified. Mm-hmm. But it's a bullshit theory, even if it has not been falsified. And a lot of our colleagues do is not so far from that either. So we shouldn't, it's okay. I mean, if one body want to study something, it's okay. But if we're presenting to our students this the speculations, just because a big community believe in it as if they were, we're sort of understood that, I think we're doing a big mistake. So that's the second warning. And the third one, and the last one, I think that there is a overhype of, and this has a lot to do with the concerns of the things we discussed the first day here. Overhype of science comes from politics. And that's equally dangerous, seems to me. Because we've been talking about, you know, political forces that have an interest of doing misinformation or disinformation. It's all true. And we are correctly thinking that it's completely wrong when politics ignores the result of science. It's obviously so. When science embodies the knowledge we have, so if whoever is in power ignores it, he's damaging everybody. Okay, no doubt about that. But, and that's the point I want to make, the political decisions are complicated because politics is not about finding the right solution to a problem. Politics is about mediating between conflicting interests and conflicting value systems, which we are together in society. We have different opinions, different ideas, different interests. And so in the ideal world, we discuss and we find a compromise, and the politician, the politics is the art of combining all that. And science has little to do about that. Science can say, if you do this, that's, as far as we know, is most probably going to happen. But the value system that says we want this or we want that, it's not scientists or the science which is involved in this, directly involved in this decision, has much to do. So let me make a brutal example. Suppose there's a disease that's spread around the world, and it kills a lot of people, okay? And there's a way of diminishing the number of people die, but it makes a lot of other people, a lot of people more poor. What do you do? The scientists can do, look, if you do that, if you close the economy, blah, blah, there will be less people dying. But people will be more poor, period. Okay, and then it's up to scientists, sorry, it's up to politics to arbitrate and to find a balance here. Now, why I'm saying all that? Because in the moment in which politics, instead of taking its decision and assuming decision, hides behind science and says, I do this because here is a scientist and the scientist has told me to do that, okay? Instead of doing on at the light of what I learned from the scientist and balancing the different push and the different values, I've decided to do that. If instead of that, politics, as it has been doing all over the planet in the last years, says, oh, we do what the scientists say, the result is that those who have a different value system or who have conflicting interests, instead of saying, I disagree with the politics, they say, I don't believe the science. And that, I think, is one of the reasons for which so many people don't believe science. So I don't want science to decide the policies of whether to close the economy or not, what to do with climate change. I want politics to listen to science and not to shut it down, and to take seriously what science says, but not to say do what the science says we should do, because science doesn't say we should do that. Science says, well, as far as we know, if you don't do that, temperature is going to increase by 1 degree, it would be fuck off for everybody. That's true, okay? But don't hide. So these are the three things I wanted to point out. First, let me just, so the overall thing is, are we hyping science too much? First, I think it's horrible what is out in the news in terms of overselling science, and I suspect we should do something. I mean, as scientists, that people who talk to, I don't know, but maybe I'm wrong. Second, I think I do frontier science. I do white holes, and I wrote a book about white holes. So I'm not saying we shouldn't write about these things, but while I was thinking about that, I opened my book and I read in the past, I don't know if black holes, if white holes exist. I don't know it. So I think the clarity about what is speculation, which is 90%, 99% of what is done in PI, for instance, and what is established science, should be crystal clear when we talk to the public. And to talk to our students, because I think our students are confused about that. And third thing, I think we should be very careful, and that's probably outside our control, but I think it regards us. We're talking about science to the public, we should say that. We should be very careful when politicians or politics itself uses science to sell what, after all, is the interest of a part against another part, instead of just listening to science and taking science into account. So that's the kind of worries that I have, and it's up to you.
Politics in the same way that politics is not separate from science. Like, I think the angling of your talk made it seem like you can do science without engaging in politics, and I think that's a faulty perspective. Because personally, I think that, like, one, like, scientists always have an ethical responsibility to think about how their discoveries or results are going to be used politically. So, for example, like, when you have researchers, like, thinking or, writing papers on, like, COVID-19, for example, you as a scientist who are an expert in this have a moral responsibility to think about how this is going to be perceived by the public, by politicians, how this is going to affect society. And I also think that inherently the process of scientific inquiry is also political. Like, anytime I think aspirationally, like, the pursuit of truth is aspirationally objective, but anytime you have a community of people, we kind of touched upon this yesterday, right? Like, anytime you have humanity involved, anything regarding the humanities is inherently political, right? So I literally sit in meetings with my advisors or, like, professors talking about how do we angle the messaging of this grant. That's political, right? Or, the fact that most science is backed by political agencies, right? So I don't know if those two things can ever be inherently separate from each other the way that I think a lot of scientists wish that they were.
Yeah, actually, let me answer to that. I actually agree with you 100%, and I disagree with myself I really do. That's what I think. I also think it's even harder message, and the bottom line seems to me the same. I mean, when politics hides behind science is objective, and therefore we do that because there's an objectivity of science that we follow, and there's no policy involved here, this is a lie. This is a big lie. So, I fully agree with you, and it's very hard to sell easily, or to talk easily, or to take easily a position, which I think it exists, where you recognize the value of the science, the value for everybody of what science does, without hiding its political aspect.
Especially when governments pay for it out of taxpayer money, right? Like, all of our science in the UK is taxpayer funded.
Yeah.
And so there's something, and now that UKRI, the UK Research and Innovation, who fund all UK scientific research, is a government body. They determine what we research and where big money goes. ARIA, which has been set up to try and be DARPA in the UK, is also internal government decisions. So it's really hard. I get that they can't just say, we're guided by the science, because there's no consensus on what the science is. But we also can't completely leave out governments and politicians from that conversation, because they're making the decisions about what science gets done. So they are intimately involved with the science. It's really hard.
Yeah.
Just a quick one. So, you know, we in the last session we talked about how to make people click on videos. There's an aspect to marketing science, and you know, we have to somehow, you know, encourage the general public to want to engage with our science, which I think you implied that journalists or, you know, whatever we call, go too far when they, you know, talk about wormholes and quantum computers and so on. So that there's a line. I mean, we need to do some. We can do too much. Do you have a sense of where that line is and how to navigate that? Like, how do we make science seem cool enough to read or click on? Without bullshitting.
Well, it's kind of what my point was going to be about as well, was where the hype comes from, like why in the past year, 3 years, it's come so much. From my experience of being asked to, you know, explain something on the radio or TV, I think it's because, you know, especially in the past 3 years, people were just like, oh, something that's completely separate from all the bad news that's going on, that's not related at all, that people can escape into. But that's become the point where now I'm rang, you know, oh, can you explain the super flower moon? It's so exciting. And I'm like, it's not, you won't even notice the difference in flower is the name that all moons in March are given. Like, it's just pointless. Like, it's nothing to do with astronomy, right?
Yeah.
And I think it's just that, I mean, people, maybe those who work in journalism can comment on this more, like specifically in that field. But like, I feel like a lot of people who are deciding what to put on where are just grasping onto anything that can be fun and exciting. And I think almost the film Don't Look Up actually probably covered this quite well, in that, like, oh, be just, you know, light and airy. And that, I think that overhyping sort of comes from that sort of, oh, please click on this instead, you know, to sort of, and to make people interested, you have to make it more exciting than it, you know, it feels like that's what you have to do in that media space of trying to get people to click on it. Because then, I think Kent Green commented on this recently, we're bringing him up again, but he did this thing where it was like, you're actually more likely to click on a headline or something that's got like a dark and dreary and dreadful thing that you should be scared of than something that you should be more.
I mean, that's what trends on Twitter, right? When people are angry and shouting at everything, that's what goes viral.
It's the things that play on fear and more negative emotions that do better, and I'm just like, wah.
Yeah. So it's almost weird that the media overhypes and sensationalizes science with positives, and yet it's been shown many times that negatives have the biggest click-through rate, whatever you want to call it. That I almost think, in a way, we should be glad that it's not been.
I mean, there is still the opposite, though. Like, there's the killer asteroid.
True. Yeah,
these things are quite threatening.
The black hole that's
pointed towards Earth from billions of light years away. It's like,
Yeah. That's true. The sensationalizing can be negative, I guess.
Yeah. Well, I think I sort of want to, like, agree with what Katrina was saying, and add, like, another way of looking at it, maybe, is I feel like a lot of what happens here is, because science has this credibility that it's, like, nominally the pursuit of objective fact, then anytime there's an argument about anything else, you want to fold it under, everyone wants to find a way to fold their view under science, in the same way that, like, when you pass a law saying, like, free speech is protected, or, you know, this, you know, kind of, this business practice is illegal, then everyone wants to argue about, like, what falls under that and what doesn't. And so you end up, I think that you can really say that, like, it's not so much even that, you know, science does this and then politics does this and those are separate. It's that, you know, like science as a set of ideas for, like, how to answer questions. This is always the framing I like to come back to. It's like, here's a set of tools to try to get you a correct answer to the question that you ask. Like, that is in an objective way. Like, you want to find out something that is true about the world. And, you know, science has this set of tools for doing that. But what questions you ask, whether you're a scientist or a politician, that is a human and political decision. And so I think a lot of what happens is people are trying to reframe their arguments as, well, this is just what science says, when, like, what science says is a product of both which questions you choose to ask and the tools you use to answer them.
I think I've also thought about this for a long time as influenced by the fact that science is a messy process and there are research studies that will you can find that will back up almost any position, right? And it's not the consensus, but they are studies, and so I view a lot of this kind of hype as maybe it's gotten larger, more in the last several years, but I viewed it all along as in some part due to the way that we represent science as if any given study is the truth. And the media often is interested in news and new things. And so you end up focusing on individual publications and results. And I am not a journalist, and I have taken a lot of effort to like only cover things that are that we have some more have had more time to like settle and understand. And I imagine as a journalist, it's a very hard thing to do to try to think about how do you cover something honestly and in the proper context. But I think that like plays into this a lot that there are science journalists who try to do these things carefully and sometimes overhype things still, and then you have the regular media, which is made up of people who don't necessarily even understand that one result is not knowledge.
Which is kind of interesting, right?
I am a journalist, but a couple of things. First of all, like Randall was saying, science, or another way of saying what Randall was saying, maybe, is that science has a great deal of political power. People want to arrogate that political power and, like, you know, wrap themselves in it and, you know, claim the mantle of science for whatever it is that they want to say. A lot of this, I think, comes back to the idea that science leads to uncertain answers a lot of the time. Like, oh, maybe there are light bulbs, right? And then when
I believe so. Huh?
What?
I strongly believe so.
Okay. Yeah.
That there are black holes.
Yeah,
holes.
Yeah,
just...
So maybe but that subtlety can get lost when you're doing the translation from the science to writing the article, and then writing the article, and I don't want to put blame on editors, but going from writing the article to writing the headline, which is generally not something that the journalist does, but is something that the editors do, and the headline plays the same role as the thumbnail for a YouTube video, right? It's to get people to click on it and read. I've written a fair bit about speculative science, and in my articles, I am always careful, or at least I have always tried to be careful, to say, hey, this is speculative. And sometimes the headlines did not reflect that, and there was nothing I could do about that, especially early in my career when I couldn't really push back.
But now you can.
Well, yes, now I can. Yes. But there's always going to be people who can't.
I think headlines are worse than YouTube thumbnails in that sense, because like a lot of people will be flipping through the news and just see the headline and never read a single thing beyond that.
Yes.
When you're flipping through YouTube stuff, like if you don't really have any context for the thumbnail, the title, like you won't take that as like news, but the headline you will take as news.
Yeah. Maybe other people are more savvy than me, but there's a lot of stuff that I have absorbed only from seeing YouTube titles. I'm honest.
I think it's partly though, as scientists, we are told people have to read our papers, right? People have to read and cite our papers. So we have to, in that introduction, give the broader picture of where this technology could go. So even if I make a molecule or someone does something that in 10 years could become this new wondrous qubit, that's going to be how you sell it in your introduction. Then how your university press office writes their little press release that will be what goes out to media, they'll pick up on that thing because it's the most accessible and tangible and real-world impact. So you see how very quickly you go from quite a well-intentioned science paper to something that is circulated amongst media outlets as this life-changing, you know, super hyped up. But scientists always just wanted to do the nice study and then potentially get that, you know, next research grant that would let them go on. So it's a really hard cycle to break.
That's a good issue. Yeah, you're right.
If I might, and
and editors.
So I
forgot who said it earlier, maybe Henry, you did, but you know, a headline, a good headline is something that people will click on the story, but that also makes a promise that you can keep, right? Mm-hmm. That the reader can read the article and get to the end of it and say, oh, that the headline makes sense. That it, you know, I understand how that works now from that. And I'm not saying that that is always done, right? But that's certainly, I think, best practices in it, in headline writing. Second is, you know, it's an ecosystem of hype, and I think that that's what press offices participate in this as well, and the scientists participate in it as well. You know, the wormhole story in particular, you had Maria Sorabalu at Caltech, Daniel Tafaris at Harvard, Joe Lycan at Fermilab. These are very good.
Shame on them.
Yeah, but they're saying, hey, we found this wormhole. And they had been pushing it literally for months through back channels.
Shame on them.
You know, it's a tricky situation then to be in.
We should finish up pretty soon, but maybe one more question and then,
Okay, it's just a small advertisement because one of the problems that was arising in this conversation was where do I find a information that is comprehensive of not just one voice and is a reliable perspective of science. So I would like just to you to advertise the work of people in philosophy of science. So basically, I am also part of an Institute of Philosophy of Science at Western, 1 hour from here, so the Rothman Institute for Philosophy. And we have people that are trained in both science, that could be physics, neuroscience, ecology, biology, and so on, and philosophy. And very often, part of the work of these people is really to have an overview of what is going on in a field and give a balanced perspective. So if you have to write articles, news in which you need a way to see things, but from somebody who really understands science, just try to contact also a philosopher.
We should probably wrap up. Let's thank Carla.
Thank you.